The responses that I've received have been honest, insightful, and true examples of how we need to open up the discussion and remove the stigma that still surrounds the menopause.
Helen Tomlinson is the UK's menopause champion, a role she does alongside her full-time job. And in this episode, The Next Round, she shares her experiences of quitting alcohol during menopause. And that clip you heard, that's Caroline Harris MP, who led a debate on menopause in the House of Commons that led to Helen's role.
I'd go out on a Friday and I'd have few glasses of wine, but then I'd have some magnesium to counteract the wine to ensure that I had a good night's sleep. And I thought, why don't I just stop doing that?
Like any sales industry, alcohol has traditionally been a big part of the recruitment sector.
When the going's good, it's a party atmosphere. When the going's not so good, it's a, you know, more of a crutch.
But as she got older, Helen was feeling the effects of alcohol more, and she decided to knock it on the head.
But taking out alcohol as well, on a good day, I feel about 120%.
Welcome to The Next Round. Stories from people who have changed their drinking habits for good and what they did next. None of us know what opportunities lie ahead, but it is far easier to find them and seize them if you're not hungover. Helen Tomlinson is the head of talent at the Adecco Group and introduced a workplace policy on menopause. And by doing so, she ended up with a national advocacy role, something she never expected, but a challenge she is passionate about. Luckily, she has the energy to do it.
You're now the government's champion for menopause. How did that come about?
I launched our menopause policy in the Adecco Group in 2021. So my day job is head of talent and inclusion at the Adecco Group. And as part of our inclusion programmes, we launched a menopause policy. And I started lobbying government at the same time to make it a legal requirement for organisations over 250 employees to have a menopause policy. And I guess in hindsight, I thought launching the policy was we've done that, brilliant, what next? And actually launching the policy was a minor thing in comparison to the education, allyship and cultural change that has gone on in the organisation since then. But it was a great starting point for us to talk about all sorts of different topics. And then I was approached in February this year about the role of the government's menopause employment champion. And I thought, because I worked in recruitment, that they were asking me to, you know, find somebody. So I was writing down all the details of the job on the call. And at the end of it, they went, "So, how about it?" And I was like, "Oh, you want me to do it?" They were like, "Yeah, we absolutely do." So it was really, but the role itself was recommended by the Women and Equalities Select Committee in their report to the government on menopause. And it was also recommended by the DWP's 50 plus choices report that was written as well. So it kind of was a culmination of that. And I guess they just felt that I was the right person for the job.
Everyone talks about recruitment being a really boozy industry. And is it as boozy as everyone says?
I think it's very fast paced. It's very much around reward for, you know, good work. It's very target driven, very pressurized, real peaks and troughs. There's never an average day in recruitment. You've always had a spectacular day or you've had a terrible day. So there isn't that. It's polar opposite. And I think starting out in recruitment, there's a lot to take on and it's very fast paced. So you celebrated your success. And back in the 90s, you celebrated your success in a way that, you know, was culturally the norm then, I guess. And also prior to coming into recruitment, I worked for a very short period of time and not necessarily in the international banking industry, but I worked in admin in an international bank. So it was all over by lunchtime. So you were going out with the guys and you were going for drinks at lunchtime. And it just kind of, you know, started off that career of this is your modus operandi after work. That literally was it. You went out with the boys and you lived like you drank like the boys and matching them drink for drink. And it was completely normal back then to go out and have like two or three glasses of wine at lunchtime and come back to work. And now that's not a cultural norm in the workplace anymore at all. So it has definitely changed over time. But yeah, it's always been a very party atmosphere almost.
It's interesting that you talk about the fact that you think the industry's changed a lot in terms of its drinking. Because, of course, you know, it wasn't that long ago that lunchtime drinking was considered normal. And that's changed quite rapidly over the last 10 years. You'd find it quite unusual, wouldn't you? So some changes are already afoot.
Definitely. I think in the last, you know, I've seen it probably even in the sort of socialising after work, I think has changed an awful lot probably in the last 4 or 5 years, partly because of COVID, but you know, that whole, I mean, I still in my local, I would still call it early doors. I mean, early doors was a huge thing when I started work, that if you didn't go out for early doors, you weren't part of the crew, and you were never going to get on if you didn't take part in that kind of socializing, etc.
So you know, obviously you got to a point in life where you realised menopause was an issue for businesses. And so I'm assuming that you were the driver around that in your company, around writing a menopause policy. I'm interested in how businesses rethink their socialising and bullying policies in response to changing drinking habits. Like, it shouldn't be that you feel under any pressure to drink at work.
Yeah.
How important do you think it is, shifting policy in the workplace?
I think it's a cultural piece, but an intergenerational piece as well. We've got 5 generations in our workforce, as have many organisations. And the polar differences in what it is they aspire to, what they want to do, how they want to spend their time. I think that has a real influence on it as well. And as part, it was kind of a secondary thing that I realized that the link between alcohol and menopause and HRT. So your HRT isn't as effective if you drink wine, or people didn't want to take HRT because they thought they were at risk of breast cancer, when actually, when you look at it from a medical perspective, there is more of a risk of drinking 2 glasses of wine a night than there is from HRT. So, and I just, you know, some of the symptoms around not being insomnia, hot flushes, night sweats, all of those things are further exacerbated. And I can only imagine that the cognitive ability as well is, you know, the brain fog, it doesn't help. So my biggest issue was, if I have even just 1 glass of wine, it ruins my sleep. And I can't afford to not have a good night's sleep because I can't function. So that was my choice to do that. But the cultural aspect of it, I think, is more that, you know, when you break down the generations, Gen Z, I think it's, you'll know better than me, but I think it's around 25% of Gen Z don't drink alcohol. And I'm really lucky that I've got a multi-generational team. And I was talking to them about it a couple of weeks ago, and one of them said, and she corrected herself afterwards, but one of the girls said, we don't drink because we've focused on, you know, careers, well-being, side hustles, all that sort of stuff. She said, and we look at it that really only old people drink. And she did realize afterwards that might have been deeply offensive, but it made,
there's much truth in jest, right?
Yeah, but it made me think, wow, is that the perception? Yeah, it does make you think, actually, I don't want to be that person.
You've talked a little bit about how alcohol and the menopause sort of collide. And I gave up drinking when I was 38 and then set up Club Soda when I was 40. And one of the first articles I wrote was about alcohol and menopause. And all I thought was, thank God I'm not drinking and that I've got that sorted. Do you think we know well enough the interlinks between menopause and alcohol? But also, you know, I find in Club Soda, there's a lot of women in my generation, a lot of those are also on antidepressants. And so there's this sort of circle of things that are affected hugely by alcohol. Do you think in that whole discussion about menopause, which is now coming up the agenda, that we're really talking about alcohol enough?
I think we're definitely starting to, because we, from my perspective in my role, I'm starting to talk more about women's health in general, because I think to just talk about, so the term menopause obviously just means that this is the point where you haven't had a period for 12 months. So that is a very finite amount of time. It's perimenopause, which is a relatively new word that's talked about broadly in business. That's the time when the symptoms can start to happen. And actually, the average age of perimenopause is 41. So you're already talking about a broader group of women, because it, previously in business, women had thought, oh, it's not my time yet. I'm not going to engage about that because I'm years off. But actually, if the average age is 41, and then in order to make sure that we are including, being inclusive in the organization and getting the conversation started younger, I've started to talk more about women's health more broadly. And that was really aided by the British Standards Institute standard they've just brought out called Menstrual Health, Menstruation and Menopause in the Workplace. So that literally covers from the day you start, you know, starting your role until the day you leave your career, because you're probably menstruating by the time you start in your role. So overlaying that with women's health has made it a lot easier to broaden out the conversation. Got to look at it as a big picture topic, haven't you? Not everybody wants to go on to HRT. And I know that there is only about 14% of women that are currently on HRT. There needs to be an education piece around that, because actually it is that some women don't go on it because of a set from a safety perspective. So that education would allow them to, but still it's not everybody's choice to do that. But there are other things that even if you are on HRT or you choose not to do it, that can really support you going through perimenopause and menopause. And things like when you start to look at the statistics around alcohol, diet and exercise, that is absolutely one of those lifestyle choices that can make a big difference. So I think more and more people are talking about it, but maybe it's just because we are talking about it more in that sphere where we're getting, you know, to get that message out to people.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about it a bit more because we're a generation that talks about stuff. That's like a big difference. These things were hidden away, and we've come from a generation, even if you look at the journalism that's changed in the last 20 years, it's a far more confessional, this is happening to me, I wonder what's going on in the world type things. So that doesn't surprise me at all as somebody who's now reaching 50. Can't believe I'm saying those words out loud, but I know there's loads of information out there for me to engage with. But we often think about the HRT, which feels like a quick fix, but the exercise, the diet and the alcohol seem a lot harder for people.
Yeah, it does, because it's woven into every aspect of life almost, isn't it? And, you know, if I'm very much an all or nothing person, so it's my choice to say, you know, I'm just not going to have a drink at all, whereas, you know, some people have, you think, well, I'll just have one, I don't know, on a Friday or a Saturday. And I think personally that is much harder to navigate and manage, because you're always going somewhere or meeting somebody or doing something, or you've always had a bad day or a good day, and so it just becomes unmanageable. So knowing that I am an all or nothing person, I just thought this is easier. I'm personally extreme, so I just thought this is easier for me. But I always say when I'm talking about, you know, my lived experience, which I do is part of my, you know, how I engage with employers, and say, you know, these are the kinds of things that happen to women during perimenopause, and I know because they happen to me, and getting out some of the really gnarly bits of it to support other women. But I say on HRT I felt about, you know, sort of 70% on HRT, and I became vegan, I felt about 80%, but taking out alcohol as well, on a good day I feel about 120%. So, you know, layering that in and getting that message out there, and it might not work for everybody, but I can only see the positives in the not doing it and how that's influenced me.
Yeah, it feels like it was the last piece of the puzzle for you. And totally. Then taking on this role, you felt you needed to have that extra percentage as well.
Oh, completely. There is no, I mean, it's literally two full-time jobs. So I could never have had the bandwidth to be able to do that, because I have to go really early to fit it all in. But also, I'm getting probably 8-9 hours sleep a night as well. but I know that if I have one glass of wine, I won't get that 9 hours sleep. And I absolutely need that to be able to give them my best.
When do you think that wine really started to impact on your sleep? For many people, that must be a more subtle shift, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess you kind of know, don't you? And I started taking magnesium to help me to sleep. I'd go out on a Friday and I'd have a few glasses of wine, but then I'd have some magnesium to counteract the wine to ensure that I had a good night's sleep. And I thought, why don't I just stop doing that? Really, that would make a lot more sense. So it was probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and I was probably perimenopausal at that time. Difficult for me to say because I had a hysterectomy, so it was kind of forced. But I would say, as soon as I started to think, oh, I had a great sleep last night and I didn't have any wine, so maybe that's the thing. Maybe I should try it again tonight. And now I would really, really have to, well, I just wouldn't, because I just know that I'm not going to have a good night's sleep. And even if, like, on holiday, so I'm going on holiday next week, and why would I sacrifice a brilliant day during the holiday for having a drink at night and not being able to sleep?
Yeah, it becomes all of that weighing up the pros and cons. It's interesting, though, because we're taught to drink on holiday because it's your holiday and that's when you should drink. And then when you really look back, you think, oh, I've just wasted half my holiday with a hangover or not feeling great. These are some social norms that we still need to really work on. If we're moving forward and menopause is becoming a bigger issue, how do you think we could begin to talk a little bit more about the way that alcohol impacts in that? And what do you think are the ways that we can do that without feeling like we're being preachy or stopping people doing something that they're enjoying?
And that is a really hard thing, isn't it? It's that preachy. And I always say, this is only my experience. This is only what has worked for me. But I do think that education, that allyship and the lived experience as well is really powerful. So the more you talk about it and the impacts it's had on you, and everybody's different. Some people like data, some people like statistics, some people like to listen to another person's story and they can relate to that person, so they think, oh, actually I'm gonna try that. The more get the messaging out there, but for me it's hearing the impact it's had on other people and the positive impact and what they've gone on then to do, that's what works for me. So I think if going out and talking about that lived experience, the more people that do that, you know, I follow all the influencers, I read all the books and all of that sort of stuff. So that, but other people really like the data aspect of it. So I do think the more we weave it into the conversation, the more we will naturally, if we're wanting women to have a better experience and a more fulfilling time in the workplace, from my perspective, that is part and parcel of that conversation for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've always felt very frustrated that alcohol isn't woven in enough into enough health conversations. We talk about diabetes, but we'll only talk about sugar and not about alcohol.
Yeah.
We'll talk about sleep. And I spoke to a group of doctors who said, oh, we never ask people how much they drink if we're diagnosing them with a sleep problem. I said, well, how can that even be possible?
Because for me, it's the key thing. It's the absolute key thing. I do also often think that it can make other people feel uncomfortable when you're not drinking, that it might be that you're almost putting a spotlight on them. It's not, so not saying I'm better than you, it's saying I'm a better person when I don't drink, and that's all that matters to me. And my other massive fear was, oh, I won't be funny, that nobody will think I'm funny when I have a drink. And actually I've proved that that's not the case, so that's good.
Going forward, you've got this amazing new role, you're working really hard, right? You sound like a lot of people who've changed their drinking, that you've got this massive burst of energy, you're doing something that you're really passionate about. So you're leaning into something that you're really excited about, and you're now an unstoppable train, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel that having this role, taking on this voluntary position, is a massive privilege to be able to be the voice for women who don't have the platform, they don't have the opportunity, and they don't have the confidence to do it. So why would I not use that platform to the best advantage that I can? And I can only do that if I'm 120% focused, driven, and, you know, achieving as much as I can, because it's a short space of time. The role is for 18 months. I don't know what will happen after that, but I feel like for me, it's an opportunity to do as much as I can in the allotted time and the opportunity that I've got. So I don't imagine I'll be slowing down anytime soon.
I definitely feel that too. Giving up drinking gave me huge amounts of energy, but also reconnected me with my values. So it's not just about having the energy to do something. It's about being able to work out what to do. And for you and I, that might be some quite public facing things. But for other people, that might be just, you know, smashing into those crafts that they always felt they wanted to do, or connecting with family, or people talk about wanting to be more present grandparents. It doesn't matter what it is.
I absolutely don't want to be a present grandparent just yet, but I agree. But it is a real, you know, it's entirely down to you what you achieve from that. But I make my little list of these are the things that I manifested, and I fully believe that I can make them happen. So, and probably 6 months ago, 10 months ago, I wouldn't have believe that.
I'm a bit like you. I think everything's possible now that I've got the energy and the bandwidth and the brain space to think about it. And rather than being in a fuzzy, slightly hungover all the time, and I couldn't even imagine what that would be like if I was fuzzily hungover on top of brain fogged perimenopause. So I'm very grateful for that. Totally.
Yeah, I struggle for words sometimes as it is, let alone, you know, being hungover as well.
How can people find out more about what you're doing and connect with your role as ambassador?
I think if they just look for me on LinkedIn, that's probably the best place, or yeah, you've got all my details on there, and obviously I'll answer any messages, but that is the main way to connect.
And certainly, you know, while I talk about policy around changing drinking, the fact that you've changed policy to enable women in the workplace going through menopause is absolutely amazing. And if any of you are listening and are in senior positions in your business, definitely adding that into your policies is really important too.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time today, Helen. That's been absolutely amazing.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much, Laura.
You can connect with Helen Tomlinson on LinkedIn. Her link is in the show notes. And then don't forget to visit us at the Tasting Rooms in Covent Garden. We have got a load of great Christmas boxes this year that you can gift. We have gift cards, and also you can book private tastings and cocktail classes. So we've got you perfectly covered for alcohol-free drinks. Find out more and buy drinks from joinclubsoda.com and at joinclubsoda. And then join us next week for more inspirational stories to get you over this Christmas hump.